On this week's Ludini Rock and Roll Circus, we're going to tell you all about the stories behind 10 albums that are essentially perfect, meaning that you can listen to the whole thing and not have to skip any tracks. You know, is that annoying? Well, these records, you just put them on and it gets chill and you can just hear one great song after another. And some of these, many of them actually were chosen by you. All that. And we're going to also announce the winner of our Led Zeppelin box set giveaway. So stick around. Get ready to rock out with your talk out. It's the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Moms and dads, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. I am your ringmaster, your master of ceremonies. There will be no ceremonies. Well, there is going to be a little human sacrifice at the end, but we'll talk about that later. We have Pittsburgh Kevin.
What's up, everybody?
We got Pittsburgh Kevin.
Speaking of the sacrifice.
And yeah, that's why I got scared.
And we have Lily V6 from Rock Rage Radio.
What's up?
Speaking of Rock Rage Radio, we have been a part of the Rock Rage Radio family for a couple of years now. Thank you, John and Gigi. You guys are awesome. But what is Rock Rage Radio? It is one of these great internet radio stations. It is actually the best internet radio station, if you don't mind me saying, where you can listen to great guitar-driven rock, 24/7 rock, heavy metal, all kind of really cool stuff is going on there. Bands you never heard of, plus many that you actually love. Great shows like Hot Licks with Lily V6, the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus, and a bunch of others. So check it out. Go to rockrageradio.com, download the app, and then you can just, you know, chill out, listen to it. It's totally free on your earbuds or stream it with your Bluetooth into your car, whatever you want to do. No need to pay for Sirius. You can just get Rock Rage. So check it out. Shout out to Wolf's Customs. Go to wolfscustoms.online. Get yourself custom paint job on your musical instrument. Wolfscustoms.online. Shout out to Chris Thunderwolf Dodson. We're going to have to get you to sit in again, buddy. It's been a while. It's been too long, my friend. So let's get you in here soon. So go to wolfscustoms.online. LouLombardiMusic.com for some cool free downloads. You want to read the story about my latest single that we've been playing here at the end of the show each week. There's the whole story about how the song was written and what it was all about. And LouLombardiMusic.com. That is LouLombardiMusic.com. As well as LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com to find out stuff about back episodes, how you can get show notes, tons of merch and everything. LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com, brand new website. We're really excited about it. And I want to give a shout out to my brother from another mother, Keith the Hawk Hawkins. He's on a little bit of a hiatus. He's going to be a little in and out because of some stuff going on in his personal life. He's going to give it the old in and out, but he'll be putting it back in very soon. Right now he's on the out, yes. But he's going to put it back in. And I hope you guys are ready. You hope you guys get lubed up for when Hawk comes back.
Oh my God.
Okay?
Yes.
So, all right, guys. We are getting into this great topic tonight. This was inspired by a Facebook post that we ran saying, hey, can you name an album that, like, is essentially perfect? And you guys named a crap ton of albums.
Ooh.
And some of which I was like, dang,
oh, yeah.
I forgot about Fire of Unknown Origin by Blue Oyster Cult. That is a great album. Great album. Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen, which actually is on my list. We might talk about later. Nice. Just so many really cool ones. You know, there's the ones you absolutely expected. We knew somebody's going to say Sgt. Pepper's, right?
I mean, legit.
Right. Somebody's going to say Sgt. Pepper's. We knew people were going to talk about Dark Side of the Moon. Mm-hmm. Of course, those are like, you know, Greg Holt said Sgt. Pepper's. A few other people said Dark Side of the Moon. Some of you guys gave us some albums that we weren't aren't that familiar with. For instance, Greg Bickerstaff said, here's an obscure one, Strength by Enough's Enough.
Whoa. I didn't even think of that.
Okay, but apparently Lily knows it. She likes it. So that's very, very cool. Debbie Schratz, who I went to high school with, Debbie and I graduated same year in high school, was one of the people that said Dark Side of the Moon. Here's one that, like Jackie Day said, that I was like, this is definitely one of those albums, is L.A. Woman by The Doors. Absolutely. Boom, boom, boom. Just listen to one song after another. My old buddy, bass player friend JT, Mothership Connection by Parliament.
I would not have thought that.
That's a good one. My Gene Fetty put in one of my personal favorite albums by Pink Floyd, not Dark Side of the Moon, with nothing against Dark Side of the Moon, but it's not that album, but it's The Division Bell. Absolutely. Yeah. That's a totally listenable album. Like, you could go song, 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 just be like chilling out, don't have to change anything. So we hit some Sabbath heads out there. Jim Dofka likes Heaven and Hell by Sabbath. Somebody mentioned one of the Dio albums. Somebody mentioned Mob Rules. And I'm going to go back and see who said that as well. Tim Amar, Highway to Hell by AC/DC. So we're going to be talking about a bunch of these tonight. Bill Thomas, Social Distortion, Somewhere Between Heaven and Hell.
I don't know enough on that album to.
Yeah, but
that.
It's.
But yes, I understand.
It's so cool that and you guys love so much music. My old buddy Jeff Mazzy says Allman Brothers Live at the Fillmore. Of course, the rock station here in Pittsburgh, WDVE, would play that album, like the whole side, and not just on an album side weekend. They would just play it because it's like great. You know, you could just put that on and go, hey, this is killer. You know, hear those guys jam like that. Absolutely amazing. So really excited to talk about this topic tonight. We've picked some of our own where we have some, going to give you guys some background and things like that about it. So let's get started. And we don't normally do this, but we are going to start with Pittsburgh Kevin.
Shut up.
Shut the front door.
Slam.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Oh, yeah, you did. All right. Well, I'm learning. I'm learning to do research, folks.
Oh, yay.
Yes.
Yeah, yes.
Yes. All right, so my first pick is Fleetwood Mac Rumors.
I hate you.
Sorry, Lily. Lily, if you want to punish me
later. This is an awesome pick. Guys, this is an awesome pick.
No,
and you're absolutely
right.
Well,
we can chime in. We can do it together.
Do your thing.
Do your thing. Give it to me, baby. Give it to me, baby.
Oh, my God.
That'd be cool if we were in stereo. You're in one ear, I'm in the other.
In one ear and out the
other. Trust me, you are in stereo.
Lily is right in the middle. So sorry, Lily. All right, so Fleetwood Mac, Rumors. It was the 11th studio album released by Fleetwood Mac, released February 4th, 1977. Unfortunately, there was a lot of hard partying going on by the band members.
No!
Yes, right?
Rock bands don't party, right,
shocked.
Lily? You never heard of that. Right?
Sure.
They never party. These are nice boys that go to church.
And ladies.
Yeah. And ladies, sure. The women.
Lady
folk.
Boys.
And probably Lady Boys.
Lady Boys. There's a band named the Lady Boys.
It's
probably
a thing.
Asian
that
Man.
That has to be a band.
What? Where, okay.
Secret Asian Man, yes.
Yes. But anyway. But due to the hard partying, it was actually delayed. Its completion was actually delayed throughout the...
You keep talking about getting laid. What are you talking about?
No,
over
there? Delayed.
Oh, okay.
Yo, like delayed.
They kept getting laid and they couldn't get the record done. Good.
I mean...
So it was a real big delay in the recording of it and the mixing down process. But I didn't know this. It won Album of the Year for the Grammys.
Yeah.
1977.
What?
Yes.
Of course it did.
Can you believe that?
For what year again?
1977.
77.
Yes, I was. Anyway.
I was 10 years old.
I was 12 years old. Look at me.
Zetto.
Actually, I was 11 at this point. That's all right.
I was not born.
So a really favorite song of mine is Silver Springs. However, it was cut. See, Lily knows because.
Sucked. Because that song sucks balls. I'm kidding. What song?
What?
Wow. You didn't even hear what song.
Man, you don't know what you're talking about Go Your Own Way. Anyway.
Yeah, Silver Spring. Go ahead.
All right, so Silver Springs. Because kids, listen to this. Back in the day, there was only a limited amount of space on these things called records.
What?
Records, yes. Yeah, they're big vinyl, black vinyl things, and there's grooves in them, and there's only so much time.
What? Well, how about
Why are you asking me this?
Okay, I didn't know.
Why are you? Why
I figured since you brought it up, maybe you would know. I'm sorry. I was trying to put
you
on spot.
Just so you know, he does this.
Yeah. apparently.
The reason I have this podcast is because I'm insanely curious. And I love talking about the topics. Good.
Apparently not enough to fit a 3-minute, 50-second song on it, right?
Right.
So they actually had to cut the song from the album. But in 2004, Rumors was remastered and they added it. You know why, kids? Because it was on CD at that point, and they could put a lot more material on there. So there you go.
As we all know.
Yes. So Buckingham, McVeigh, and Nix worked individually on most of the songs. However, the song The Chain is the only song on the album which all members collaborated on. And I think what makes, and everybody probably knows this story by now, what makes this album so good is the emotion went behind it, because most of the songs reflect the internal personal struggles of the couples in the band at the time. Buckingham and Nix were breaking up. John and Christine McVie were breaking up.
Let's just say they were all doing each other.
And they were all doing each other.
And Mick Fleetwood and Stevie Nicks fell in love with each other in the middle of the whole thing. But they were like, this band's been through too much. We can't do this.
Yeah, that's it. So I think that reflects in the songwriting and the passion behind it.
Stevie, as good of a piece of ass as you are, look, man, my band's more important. That I respect. Here's to Mick Fleetwood. Yes. Yes, to Mick frickin' Fleetwood.
Basically, this album was a critic's wet dream. They got perfect scores.
Speak for yourself. I do not have wet dreams. I do not engage in that sort of behavior.
Right. Anyway, this is one of the only albums with a perfect score from nearly every critic out there. And it is a softer rock album, but it does
Yacht
it does rock.
Rock.
Yes, it does rock justice. So yay.
No. Go Your Own Way is a hard rocking tune.
It's a good, right? It's one of their most rocking tunes. The Chain is that's a great riff, too.
That's great, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I really had
John. Actually, two different songs that they could not finish, so they actually brought the two songs together.
That is John McVie really kind of shines at the end of that. Mm-hmm. And I know that him and Lindsey clashed when Lindsey first joined the band, because John is kind of a busier kind of bass player. And, you know, Lindsey was like, you know, he wanted it played like more straight. But, you know, that's the great thing about being in a band is you don't get your own way all the time.
Don't.
And you know what? Very often the music is better because of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to have that other, you know, if you want your own way the whole time, go do a solo album.
Exactly.
Lily V6, so what do you have, my dear?
I have Pump.
What?
Oh,
yes.
Whoa.
10th studio album by American heavy metal band Aerosmith. I did not pick Rocks or Toys in the Attic because there are quite a few songs I could actually skip on both of those.
Toys.
Yeah.
Toys in the Attic.
There are a couple songs on Rocks I like, but not all of them, so I can skip some of those songs. So this is why I picked Pump, because I can listen to it the whole way through. It peaked at number 5 in the U.S. and was certified septuple platinum in 1995.
Wow. That's like a whole lot or something, isn't it?
It is.
They're selling on that.
Yeah, a whole bunch.
I think everybody in my hometown.
Yeah.
I have 2 copies of it.
Some of them have.
See, here's the problem. Here's why.
I ruined the first copy.
They're loading the deck by having people like Lily buy 2 copies.
Come on,
they
now.
Probably didn't sell that many records.
I ruined the first one because I played it too much. It was a variety of successes and firsts from the band, including their first Grammy Award. Love in an Elevator became the first Aerosmith song to hit number 1 on mainstream rock. The album was the 4th best-selling album of the year in 1990. And then there was a video documentary on the recording, which I do have on VHS somewhere, and I will probably never watch it because I don't have a VCR. It was released in 1990 as well. At a time when young guys from like Motley Crue and Poison were doing their like best to hoist the heavy metal crown, these guys took away heavy metal album of the year. So, and they were older, much older. So that was awesome. I love everything about this album, including the transition tracks that get you into the next song, as well as the addition of the non-traditional instruments, such as the dulcimer and the didgeridoo used by Randy Roish in different ways. And it's different, and it's fun, and it's catchy. And I love all the songs. All of them.
Every single one.
That's a great pick.
Yeah, it is.
That's a freaking great pick. You're absolutely right. It's so funny. Like, you know, they did all those great records, and then they really exploded. They had like a total resurgence at that, you know, in the, what year was that again? 89. 89. So late 80s. They had this giant resurgence with these three records that all came out that, like, got them back, you know. And, I mean, they still became really, they stayed really big. And they had, but they had to get off drugs. Like, that was a problem.
Yeah, or they wouldn't find success again. Because that's what drove them down. So,
Jerry Romeo said, every Beatle album. That's a good one. And my,
I do expect that from him.
And my very good friend, Dr. Jody Ferlizzi, her and I are going to go try to go for a drink this weekend, she has Pleased to Meet Me by The Replacements.
Oh.
That's a Jim Dickinson.
Yes.
That's a famous record that he produced. But you guys are great, man. I'm really appreciate it. And I think we have some watchers. You want us to give a quick yell out to Miss Lilith?
We have Tracy Sampson and Bob Malte, and I probably said that wrong. I'm sorry.
Hey, Bob. Hey, Tracy. Great to have you guys. I'm sure some folks are watching on Rock Rage Radio. And I know Pittsburgh Kevin is watching on YouTube right now.
Yeah.
He's the only one, right?
I'm not narcissistic at all. And I'm not even on screen. That's how bad it is.
Okay. I am going to pick one of my favorite albums of all time. And you were talking about wearing out a copy of an album,
is
right?
Is yours?
And I wore this, I'm on my third CD of this. My honorable mention, and we're not going to talk about it real quick, is, I just want to say, let me preface this by saying, a lot of albums, if you go back to our series of album retrospectives, I would say the most of those albums are like, you know, Purple Rain, Synchronicity, you know what I mean? Like, well, those are records, like, you just go, there's like no problem.
I'd be lying if I didn't say I took from that list as well.
Yeah, that's a great, Bat Out of Hell, them. You know what I mean? Yeah, no, they're like, so, but I have, one of my personal favorites is Archangels, by the way. I'm just going to say, that is a record. If you don't know, go listen to the whole thing, you'll love it. But this is, this band came out as a, this is one of the early, I'm going to use this funny word, post-grunge bands, okay? It's one of the first bands that were like, no, we're not grunge. You know, it really wasn't grunge, but it wasn't like hip-hop or like the, you know, real poppy, glammy kind of, you know what I mean? It was had a very earthy kind of vibe, and this album is all about the songs. The instrumentation is absolutely perfect, and it really, the band really kind of lays back on this album and lets Adam Duritz shine. Of course, it's August and Everything After by Counting Crows. Very subdued, and it really was. And like, I could put their first four albums, by the way, on this list of, because they're all that good. But when you get to the next record, then you hear the band really rock out. There's all kind of awesome guitar solos and things like that. But this record, man, it's like, it's just the songs, you know. It's very much, and when they came out, people compared them to Van Morrison. They compared them to the band. They were obviously influenced by those guys, but their big hit off the record, of course, everybody in this. I would admit, if we want to talk about overplayed songs, Mr. Jones, is an overplayed song, of course. You know what I mean? And now everybody with an acoustic guitar sings it at coffee house night, you know, and stuff like that. But there were several singles released on the album. Cover depicts the lyrics to the song August and Everything After, which is not on August and Everything After.
Huh.
They didn't release it. They just did not put it out on that album. Many years later, they put out a deluxe edition. They put the song on it, and they toured for a while doing the August and Everything After tour, where that they did the whole, played the whole album, and they would play the song then. But there's something that is so interesting and so inspiring about this project. Well, also produced by the amazing T-Bone Burnett. Right. He can do like no wrong. You know, those great movie soundtracks, worked with a lot of famous people. But we talk about how Kiss are such great businessmen. You know, we talk about that. Mm-hmm. You know, but these guys in Kiss fashion, I would put this in the category of that, because this is so much insanely smart business thinking that, like, because what happens to so many bands, right? They take the big record label advance, and then that advance is a loan.
Right.
And like a very bad loan, because basically they don't just want you to pay it back. They want your soul. Okay. So what Counting Crows did was they saved their money. They worked
smart guys.
They worked day jobs, okay? Saved their money. Hired T-Bone Burnett themselves, paid for the album themselves.
Huh.
Okay? And they would not take one dime from the record label. When the album comes out, within about a year or so, they're all millionaires. Mm-hmm. They never have to do anything ever again if they don't want to. Freaking brilliant! Like, that more bands should, and he taught, there's a Classic Albums about this on VH1, where he talks about how, like, they'd seen so many of their buddies in L.A. at that time doing these records and, like, getting these great deals, because record labels were really looking for new music at that time. Well, after Nirvana happened, they were like, we gotta get the new thing. And so they were, like, going after every band. So it was a hot time to get signed. I had near misses in the 90s with being signed on a couple of different bands I was in. And, you know, I mean, we weren't that freaking great. It was just that, like, they were hungry for new music. And they saw so many bands take big advances, the Clarks, and be, like, in debt, sold, stamped, delivered, you know, screwed. For the rest of their life, screwed. You know, they would have to go out and do tours where they just played their, you know, three hits from their first album and, you know, be schmucks or what it feel like schmucks, not be schmucks, but feel like schmucks or whatever. And they were like, we just weren't going to do that. So they hatched this plan to save their money, pay for the album themselves. And basically the rest was gravy. The record label got a little bit for distributing it and marketing it. But basically, since they had no advance, they were able to, like, leverage a lot for themselves. So that is something I think is really interesting. I think a lot of people don't realize about this album. And I'm not going to go through the tracks or whatever, but everyone's a winner. Although it is a little, it's one of those records to listen to when you're going through a breakup.
Right.
It's got that kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know? So, like, if you're going through a breakup, put this on right now. All right. that is my, I felt like I talked for 20 minutes.
You didn't actually at all.
Okay. I felt like
it was more like 5 minutes. Okay. That.
All right, guys. All right. So let's move on. Pittsburgh, Kevin, do you have another one for us?
I think you do. So, my next pick is Def Leppard Hysteria.
Ah, gooden. Gooden.
No, I have the other one. Okay.
Okay. Good. Get good. did you hear me playing it earlier today?
No.
I'll turn it up next time.
Yeah.
Was anyway, I home?
You were home. Okay. Yes.
I might have been.
He had it so loud you could hear it at work, Lily.
No, I mean, he asked if I heard it. Maybe I wasn't there. No,
I know. I'm kidding.
I don't play my stuff very loud. All right. So, Hysteria is the fourth studio album, released August 3rd, 1987. It's their best-selling album to date. It charted number one on both Billboard and the UK albums charts. Produced by Robert John, you know him as Mutt Lang. The title was thought up by Rick Allen, referring to his 1984 car accident, yes. In which, of course, he lost his arm. Yes, no. Yes. Sadly, last album to feature Steve Clark before his death. It took over 3 years to complete, mainly because of, you know, Rick's accident and things like that.
Oh, that was because of Mutt Lang trying to get the perfect drum sound.
Well, that too. And Mutt actually wanted to create a hard rock version of Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Oh, okay. That, I kind of see that.
And that each track had a potential hit single, you know, as a...
Well, and like, that's similar to a record that I'm going to talk about later, but go ahead.
Okay. But that's it. That's it. Yeah. that's one of those ones. And I was playing it today as I thought of it. I'm like, oh, yeah. And every song that came on, I'm like...
You could leave it.
Yeah. I would say, I don't know every song on that album, but I would venture that like two-thirds of that album to three-quarters of that album all got at least played on the radio.
On the radio, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, even really...
And the ones that didn't, you're like, well, that could have been.
Could have been. They just didn't get around to marketing that one. Right.
Yes.
Right. Good pick, Kevin. Thank you. Really, thank really you good. Thank you. And we're going to be announcing the winner of the Led Zeppelin box set in 6 minutes. Lily V6, what do you got? Speaking of six. 6 minutes to the album and 6 minutes for Lily V6.
We need one more six.
No.
Six, six, six.
We're just short of the devil.
Wait.
What the hell is that thing?
It's a lightning bug.
It's a lightning bug.
Don't.
I just batted it away. It's fine.
Anyway, the next song on my list is Appetite for Destruction. Awesome.
Firefly.
The debut studio album by Guns N' Roses.
Appetite.
This one took a year to catch on. that everybody liked it, but once it did, it held that coveted number one spot and went on to sell over 30 million copies. And it happened after the band had toured and received airplay with the singles Welcome to the Jungle, Paradise City, and Sweet Child of Mine. It topped the Billboard 200 and became the best-selling debut album of all time, as well as the 11th best-selling album of all time in the United States. Singer Axl's Rose said that many of the songs on the album were written while the band was performing on the L.A. club circuit, and a number of the songs that would be featured on later GNR albums were considered for Appetite for Destruction, like Back Off Bitch, You Could Be Mine.
Whoa, Memory. language, come on. It's really? A family show.
Is it? Bitch. Wow. November Rain and Don't Cry. MTV and radio stations did not want to play Welcome to the Jungle video and song, but after several months of trying, Geffen's general manager managed to get MTV to play their video just once and became the most requested video on MTV's network.
It's badass. The set riff is freaking good. It's one of the greatest riffs of all time. Absolutely.
That used to be mine and a friend's like getting ready to go out song.
All right.
That we would like put our makeup on and, you know, have our pregame drinks and that sort of thing. This is one I often put on the phone, iPod, whatever, for road trips because I don't have to change it. And the album's just
nobody's owned an iPod for about 12 years. Go ahead.
My iPod is on here. It's actually an iPod because it's an iPhone. Whoa. Anyway, the album is just packed with tracks from start to finish. So good stuff. I sing them all too in the car.
Yeah.
I perform in the car.
She's a car things. Performance artist. Mm.
Don't ask.
Oh, I'm asking.
I'm not telling.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, I'll go and do one. Okay. Why don't I go ahead and do one? I think I know Lily has this band on her list, but I picked a different record because these guys, their first album, their second album, their fourth album, and their fifth album are all albums that you could just chill. Actually, even their third album. This is one of those bands that, like, somebody said the Beatles' entire catalog. And this band is very much like the Beatles in the sense that, like, there's really not a lot of filler on Led Zeppelin albums.
Right.
Now, Coda has that long Bono's Mantra, which is, like, into some people are on some of that. But that is a record that they released as a sort of almost, like hidden tracks or, like, forgotten tracks, you know, kind of album they did after John Bonham's passing away. But I think you could probably pick any Led Zeppelin album and put it on this list. But I picked Led Zeppelin 2. I remember buying this album. I bought, I went through a period of time where I album shopped at a little place here in Canonsburg where there was a record shop upstairs and there was a guitar shop and drum shop downstairs. And that was Guitar Gallery. And there were several albums that ended up becoming really, really important to me that I bought there. And Led Zeppelin 1 and Led Zeppelin 2 are two of those albums. Robert Plant was a little frustrated because they had to record. They recorded this album in several different studios. It was recorded like all over the place. This wasn't like one of those like we booked studio time and we went for 3 weeks and blah blah blah. No, it was here and there. Stuff on the run. There are tracks where they had a day off in between dates on a tour and they went in and recorded and things like that. So it was like they were really hustling. They were touring their first album and they were really go like let's get another record out because like the thing is really going. This record was recorded by the legend with the legendary Eddie Kramer as credited as a producer. But Eddie has come out and said that really the reason why that album sounds the way it does is because of Jimmy Page.
Yeah,
he says we recorded in all these crazy places. He says some of the studios were very bizarre, very weird. We recorded in all these places. He says, but the album sounds totally consistent. He says, I'm not exactly sure what happened.
Magic.
He says, because it was Jimmy, like, just, like, being so detailed about what he wanted. So, like, Eddie Kramer, who's, like, worked with Jimi Hendrix and, like, everybody, Bad Company, all kind of bands, is coming out and saying, now I got to kind of, like, give Jimmy Page. I mean, that's saying a lot about Jimmy Page. Mm. And it is a dynamite album. And one of the things I noticed we're not doing with this, and maybe we should, is just give a quick track listing.
Oh, I have all those.
So Whole Lot of Love. I mean, Whole Lot of Love, they closed every show with this for like their entire after the album came out till they stopped playing. What is and what should never be, written by Robert Plant, and a beautiful song, insanely good song. The Lemon Song, who doesn't love the Lemon Song? Thank You, side two opens with Heartbreaker, and then Live and Love and Made. Ramble On,
I love that song,
amazing. Moby Dick, which is an instrumental, but that gets played on the radio, and it closes with the Bonham Dixon Jones Plant Page song, Bring It On Home. It is a sort of take on the old Willie Dixon song, Bring It On Home. So it is, we know all the songs. I mean, there's no reason why you couldn't put that on record. Interesting footnote, cassette tape release has Heartbreaker ending the first side and Thank You starting the second side. We were talking about albums before, mm-hmm. and they had so much time with cassettes, even were even worse.
Yeah.
So sometimes the album, like, they had to rearrange the tracks to make it all work.
That sucks.
Interesting stuff. So we did a Led Zeppelin. Speaking of Led Zeppelin, I didn't even realize I was going to do that.
You segued so good.
I thought you did on Empire. Wow.
So this is one of the albums. This is the album with Stairway to Heaven on it. Zozo, Led Zeppelin 4, Led Zeppelin 3. We have here, and these are brand new, guys. These are new, so you're not getting any kind of garbage or anything. This is the record that, started freaking everything. Good Times, Bad Times. It's the first song that people ever heard by Led Zeppelin. But, how do you decide what's going to be the song that's going to introduce the world to Led Zeppelin? It's amazing. And, of course, the record I was just talking about, Led Zeppelin 2. Which has got this amazing artwork, and if we had more time, I would get into the whole thing. Maybe we can do a classic album on Led Zeppelin too. I don't think anybody here would argue with doing that. But it's the first four albums from Led Zeppelin, and we are right now going to go ahead and pick the winner.
Well, Lou.
Yes.
I don't know if the people know how we went about picking the winner. It's very. How many different?
There were 455 people enter.
How do you pick a winner from that? Well, let me tell you, Lou.
Okay.
Your crack staff went through many algorithms. They checked people's love for rock and roll, their knowledge of music.
You had to get a blood sample too.
Blood sample, in the end, they picked the. They picked the winner as the chick with the biggest tits. So
these are mine. Thank you.
Lily gets them, and good night. Okay, so we're gonna use a random number generator right now.
Do it.
And cool. We're gonna put. Okay. So we have 455. I'm gonna hit generate. That isn't Kevin doing that sound. That is actually a real random number generator that we have in here. This thing is heavy, man. Whew. We need a bigger studio for this. So the winner is... Oh, God. Not this guy. He can't get it.
Is it me?
Go all the way to the left.
I'm going to go all the way to the left here. We have all the names here. So this guy is Nicholas. I know somebody's name I can't pronounce. Thank you.
Surochak?
Surochak. Nicholas Surochak.
You are the winner.
Nicholas.
You're the winner. So congratulations, my friend.
Nice.
We do appreciate you participating in the contest. There's a new contest coming for new fans soon, and we're going to be doing some contests internally as well where you get to win some cool Ludini swag and a few other things. But, guys, thanks for hanging out with that. LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com, LouLombardiMusic.com. Get you a couple of different things. Shout out to Wolf's Customs at wolfscustoms.online, and don't forget to download the app at rockrageradio.com. Now, I'm not saying all that because we are done. I'm saying that because we are moving on to getting back to talking about albums that are, for all intents and purposes, perfect. So, thank you, Nicholas. Thank you, brother. We do appreciate it. Okay.
All right.
So, Mr. Pittsburgh.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
It's Mr. Pittsburgh.
Hi, everybody. See, welcome to the show. Now, I know.
I didn't.
you did. Anyway, we're going to get t-shirts made up. Drink. I know for a fact that Lily does not have this. Hold on, I have to drink too.
Talk amongst yourselves.
I know for a fact that Lily does not have this album on her list. You know why, Lily.
Can I guess?
Oh, I already know why.
Can I guess? Can I guess?
Go ahead.
Moving Pictures.
No!
No?
Tell him what he wins, Johnny. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that is it. Okay.
It is that, yeah. So, Moving Pictures by the band Rush. Is there eighth?
Not a fan. Just kidding.
I'm not.
Come right over here and punch you right in the throat.
No, I love it. You know I love Rush.
It's their eighth studio album recorded in Le Studio.
But was it recorded in Dublin?
No. It was, no, Dublin. He means Dolby. Anyway.
Hal, when you do the audiogram for this week, dude, I think you can have like a lot to pick from, buddy.
There you go.
Go ahead.
All right. Recording in Le Studio in Morin Heights, Quebec, October and November of 1980. Released February 12th, 1981.
I was not born.
That's why you don't like it. You don't remember it coming out.
Oh, man, I remember this record big time. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
So after the radio airplay of Permanent Waves, Rush and co-producer Terry Brown focused on writing more radio format friendly songs featuring a tighter song structure and shorter length. So and it worked, apparently. Tom Sawyer, of course, the opening track is the quintessential Rush song. I mean, I was aware of Rush. You know, you heard their stuff. But yeah. Boy, when that hit the airwaves.
That's like, oh, you want to hear some Rush? You put that on. You know, if anybody doesn't know what Rush is, you know, just play that. That's like everything they've ever done in one song.
In one song.
It's really, it's a masterpiece.
There you go.
I said master. Go ahead.
You are the master of
peace.
Anyway. Yeah, that's it. So I didn't know this. YYZ was actually nominated for a Grammy for Best Rock Instrumental Performance. Did you know that?
I knew that.
I learned that, yes.
Just now?
Yes, as you said it. No, I have this on my list too, so I researched it, so I picked up a few tidbits.
Yes. So now this next part will interest you and I. So this is the very first song that Geddy used his 1972 Fender Jazz Bass on, replacing the Rickenbacker because the Rickenbacker just didn't have a low enough bottom end. So there you go.
Big bottom. Oh, that song is not on that album.
It
didn't hang low. But yeah, it's another one of those ones where I can just put it on, listen to it the entire way through, not have to skip through any songs.
I just get mad when I put that on.
And you know what? You know what, Lily? That's okay.
I know.
We understand.
I have, when we're done, guys, I have some podcast ideas that I want to run by you, but that involve more of like more
midgets?
More about our personal like opinions about.
Oh,
stuff.
Okay.
So we'll talk about this. Boy. We'll talk about this later. We have some. I got some. I'm cooking on some ideas, guys. I think you're gonna like coming up in the future. But what do you got, Miss Lilith?
I'm gonna go a little heavier. I'm gonna say
Iron Maiden.
Vulgar Display of Power.
Okay. I knew you were gonna be some metal thing. God. Awesome.
I gotta appease those peeps. A sixth studio album by American heavy metal band Pantera came out in 1992, so obviously I remember when this one came out. It was the band's second collaboration with producer Terry Date after having previously worked with him on their breakthrough album Cowboys from Hell. The album was well received by both critics and fans and is Pantera's highest selling album to date and would eventually be certified double platinum. It's often considered one of the most influential heavy metal albums of the 90s. In 2017, Rolling Stone ranked Vulgar Display of Power as 10th on their list of the 100 greatest metal albums of all time. Several of its tracks have become among the band's best known, such as Mouth for War, A New Level, Walk, I'm gonna swear, Fucking Hostile, and This Love. Drummer Vinnie Paul said that Cowboys from Hell was really close to the definitive Pantera sound. Vulgar Display of Power received critical acclaim upon release. Many critics have praised Daryl's guitar work on the album and use of heavy riffs and tone to set the tone for the album. Reviewers also pointed out that the change in Anselmo's vocals from previous releases with him using deeper growls and powerful vocals to accompany the catchy riffs and aggressive lyrics, because they did sort of used to be a glam metal band
before they changed
to this real heavy sound. This album peaked at number 44 on the Billboard, spent a total of 79 weeks on the chart, the most weeks any Pantera album has spent on the chart, and has been listed as one of the 1001 albums you must hear before you die. And I agree.
Wow, good picks. Good picks, everybody. Earlier, Kevin was talking about an album by Def Leppard, Hysteria, where the idea was, could every song be a single, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a band that actually did this, and every song made the radio. Every single song on this album...
Oh, yeah, I knew that.
It's not, this was unheard of. for this to happen. And this record is so interesting. We might have to go back and do a classic albums on this. It is the debut by Boston.
Oh, man, yes.
And every song is like, you know. And you don't just, it's not like I heard them once. It's,
you hear them all the time.
You hear them all the time. More than a freaking feeling. Peace of Mind, not the Iron Maiden song. Foreplay, Long Time, Rock and Roll Band, Smoking, Hitch a Ride, Something About You, Let Me Take You Home Tonight. These are all songs that you all know. Tom Scholz is the sort of mastermind behind Boston. Not the city, the band,
and the album.
But him and he was produced. This album was produced by Tom Scholz and a guy named John Boylan. What Scholz basically did was he used Boylan to distract the record label because he did not want to record in California. He wanted to do the entire album in his studio with his friend Brad Delp singing, and that's what he wanted to do. So he had Boylan running kind of interference and making the record label think they were in L.A. somewhere recording. almost all of it was recorded in Tom Scholz's home studio. He plays the whole album except for Brad Delf singing.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
This is like the Foo Fighters before the Foo Fighters.
Right.
Okay. People do not like the song Rock and Roll Band. You would practice right out under the streets. We were just another band from Boston. None of that is true.
BS.
That's all just fantasy. All but that's up. Great songwriting, right? I mean, like Joe Strummer said one time, the best cowboy songs are written by a Jew from New York. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's that like fantasizing about something that like kind of makes something really, really awesome.
Great storytelling.
Scholz, you know, because he had built so much of his own equipment and everything, this is like kind of how the Boston sound happened. I mean, this is like, you know, kids in their bedroom making albums like they're doing now, but this was in the 70s when it was really freaking hard.
Yes.
Really expensive and really hard, and he had to be really, really smart. There was no YouTube video to show you how to do it. You know? So, I mean, it's really, this is an amazing album, if not for that. But I mean, we're talking about listenability, but still, this is a you know, amazing a feat that they accomplished. And of course, the album sold 800 Guga million, you know, whatever, to everybody. There's nobody that doesn't
Lily
know.
Lily has three. She has three copies.
There is, yeah. Well, Lily's the one who's stacking the deck for these bands. I'm just kidding. And there isn't anybody here that does not know More Than a Feeling. It was on a VH1 list of most overplayed songs at one point.
It's in movies. It's in commercials. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, it's absolutely everywhere.
Video games.
Yeah, and then Tom Scholz went on to do all kinds of things. He worked for Kodak and developed the Kodak disc camera. He went on to create all kind of, in the guitar world, all kind of guitar equipment that guitar players, you know, had to have, you know, in the 80s. You just had to have it.
You know, when you mentioned that, one
your
of the things...
My Rockman is sitting right there.
Your Rockman is sitting right here. But Mutt had them use Rockmans on Hysteria. So if you listen to the guitar tone, you can hear it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well... There you are. So somebody must have been thinking about this album at the time. But yeah, Boston, by Boston, and released in 1976, our country's bicentennial. God bless America. Ooh. All right. Pittsburgh, Kevin, and our firefly.
There's the
is
firefly.
Flying.
There's Mother Firefly.
He's a flying.
Knock, knock.
We have a firefly.
Yeah, firefly.
Lily's terrified of
my next
terrified.
Album.
I don't like bugs.
They like you, though.
I don't
me.
Like bugs, and
they
I just
told
sorry.
Me. My next album is ABBA Arrival. I'm just kidding.
It might be. I haven't heard that album. No, you might love every song on it.
I'm just kidding. All right.
A record that wouldn't be make our list because we're rockers would be the soundtrack to Saturday Night Fever. Of course.
Oh.
Of course. Like, yeah. I'm not like, but I'm just saying, we're not going to get into that, but I'm just saying, like, that's a, you know, you have to give the devil his due. Like, every song is great.
Exactly.
But go ahead. What do you
no,
got?
No, I'm done.
Do you have another one?
No, I told you. I only had three.
Oh, okay.
He's done.
Wow.
Well, let me read some things anyway.
Yeah, come on.
Read some things. Lily's reading some things.
Michael Gold says Hysteria was an amazing album.
Yes.
Bill Damiano coming in late, but I love Hysteria. I don't know what albums you guys have mentioned so far, but for me, Kiss Destroyer would be on my list.
Who said that?
Damiano.
Oh, Damiano.
Todd Kane, Let's Go with Foghat, Fool for the City.
Mm.
And Bill Damiano, I got a cool Ludini hat that I've been wearing on my show.
Thank you.
Nice. Someone agrees with me on Rush socks. this one, Bill Damiano. Again, this one might get mixed reactions, but Metallica Black would be on my list too.
You know, yeah. I had that on my list. I just, like, I was thinking about it this week. I'm like, that's an album that definitely needs to be on. We don't need to talk about that, but that is definitely an album that you, every song is great. I'm sorry, metalheads. Sorry, Metallica broke your heart, but go ahead. What do you got, Lily?
Anyway, since you talked about it, I have it on my list anyway. Bat Out of Hell, Meatloaf. 1977, yeah. Debut album by American rock singer Meatloaf and composer Jim Steinman, also produced by Todd Rundgren. It was developed from a musical Neverland, a futuristic rock version of Peter Pan, which Steinman wrote for a workshop in 1974. It has also spawned two sequels. I don't care what they are. Bat Out of Hell is one of the best-selling albums of all time, having sold over 50 million copies worldwide.
So 50 million?
Yes.
They sold 50 million copies? That's crazy!
Certified 14 times platinum. It's full of energy throughout, and it's just an epic album all around. Response to the energy. Album was slow. Todd Rundgren asserts that it was underpromoted, having a reputation of being damaged goods. Because it had been walked around to so many places. They tried forever to sell this album.
Yeah, and people didn't get it because Steinman had written like musicals.
Yeah.
So they were very leery about this guy. Like, what the hell does he know about pop
music? Like, what is this?
Yeah.
Like, who does he think he is? Yeah. Due to the enthusiastic response to the music videos from the record, Australian and British audiences were the first to develop interest. Meanwhile, North America, according to Billboard magazine, Popovich and his partners began promoting the album aggressively in Omaha, Nebraska, of all places, Cleveland, and New York. Reviews were initially mixed, but have since become more positive. As we all know, it's one of the greatest albums. On release, Dave Marsh's review in Rolling Stone called the song swell, but entirely mannered and derivative, and noted that that the arrangements aren't bad, and commended the musicians. He concluded by noting that the principals have some growing to do. So he just needs smacked around a little bit. He's also from Rolling Stone, so there's that. But the tracks are Bat Out of Hell, You Took the Words Right Out of My Mouth, Heaven Can Wait, All Revved Up with No Place to Go, 2 out of 3 Ain't Bad, Paradise by the Dashboard Light, which we all know I love to sing at karaoke if I'm drunk enough, and For Crying Out Loud. So, real short album as far as songs go, but it's a long album because the songs are long.
Mm-hmm.
Epic stories. Storytelling.
Amazing. Yeah. Somebody out there, tell me, but there's the thing called false memory syndrome. So this might be a false memory.
Okay.
But I've watched several different documentaries about Meatloaf and about the making of this album, and I believe that Jim Steinman tells a story that on Paradise by the Dashboard Light, or no. By the hell with the revving, that they needed that sound. He's like, we got to have that sound. So Todd Rundgren got frustrated and went in and plugged the guitar. And he says, oh, you mean like this? And he started something on the guitar, like with a whammy bar or something. And that's it.
I heard that too. Is it true? Who knows? But I heard that too.
There you go.
things that make you go, And that album is not on the list, by the way.
It is not
on
the list?
No, Delight.
Come on.
Come now. I said. Okay. I'm going to pick one that is... should I go with something? Or what time is it? Let me see how much time we got left. We're getting low. So I'm going to... I was going to pick one that maybe our audience may or may not like. But what I'll do is I will do... I did a 90s album. Let's go old school here.
Okay.
Do you have this on your list? Okay, well, I'll let you do that.
I'm going to do this. I still have a bunch, so go ahead.
And then what we'll do is I'll just run down the ones that we didn't get a chance to talk about real quick. I'll just say blah, 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 blah. No, I'll actually say the names. I won't say blah, 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 blah.
Good,
but I will actually say the name. Yeah, we wouldn't want to confuse.
I had that one. That was
we
good.
We wouldn't want to confuse anybody out there in the audience. So this is, of course, everybody, first thing you learn on guitar, Smoke on the Water. This is the album of Smoke on the Water, Machine Head by The Purple.
The Purple People.
Did you say The Purple?
Yes. The Purple People.
I almost put this on my list.
This is such... I almost had myself a heart attack when I'm going. I had Smoke on the Water is on Machine Head, isn't it? I had
wait.
Boom, boom, boom. who's the biggest idiot in podcasting? Ludini.
I find myself doing that all the time. I'm just, sorry. I'm like, wait a minute. Did I screw that up?
But they've been touring, 71, they've been touring for 2 years and had a couple other studio albums out. And they didn't feel like their first record sounded as good as their live performances. And they had done a record with the London Symphony Orchestra or something. They had screwed around and stuff like that. But the group toured for the UK September to October 71 and previewed some of the new material that they were thinking about releasing that was going to become Machine Head. And what ended up happening is they ended up using a mobile recording rig. And they were going to do it at the Montreux Casino. But
I knew this.
Some stupid with a flare gun burnt the place to the ground.
To the ground?
This song, Smoke on the Water, is about the Montreux Casino catching on fire. And the song is a true story. You know, Funky Claude pulling kids out onto the ground. You know, all that stuff actually happened. So they ended up going to an abandoned motel or hotel rather, and recording the album with the Rolling Stones recording mobile that a lot of people use. The Who used it, it was like the Stones, man. They were good business people too, man. They had to make money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they knew how to make some money. But it is. Let me give you some of the tracks on it. Again, this could be right up there with the Boston album, Highway Star.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Okay, here's one maybe you don't know as well, but it's still a very cool song. Maybe I'm a Leo. Pictures of Home, Never Before, Smoke on the Water, Lazy, and ends with Space Truckin'. Come on. So, yeah, it's just front to back. The band is on freaking fire. It's like kind of them, like they're like ultimate. You know, yes, the records that with Glenn Hughes and stuff are really great too, but this is a kind of like, you know, this is their what? This is their Sgt. Pepper's. This is their Metallica Black album. You know what I mean? This is the record that like, you know, people are just going to come back to and just want to rock out to. All the other records are great, but this is really the one where it's just yes. So yeah, like it's one of those. If aliens land, you say they said to you, what does Deep Purple sound like? You would play them this record.
There you go.
Okay, so let's go. Lily, I know that we can't get to everybody, so maybe just do a quick rundown of the ones you didn't get to, just to kind of give people a...
Sure, so Van Halen.
Yeah, me too.
1977. It has some of the best well-known songs, Running with the Devil, Ain't Talking About Love, Jamie's Crying. You Really Got Me, which is the cover of The Kinks, and the 1 minute 42 second Eddie Van Halen instrumental Eruption, one of the best electric guitar solos of all time, let's just face it. So... that whole thing is good for me. I don't know about you. The Doors, 1967. Light My Fire. It's in 2015, the Library of Congress selected The Doors for inclusion in the National Recording Registry. Break On Through, Soul Kitchen, The Crystal Ship, 20th Century Fox. I mean, that goes on and on and on. This is one of the ones I used to listen to, like, right after school. I'd go in my room, just turn all the lights off and just listen to it. Because I wasn't doing drugs, but...
You wished you were.
Kind of wished I was.
Maybe this is what it's like to do drugs.
Dio, Holy Diver, 1983.
Oh, yeah, good one.
He just finished his tenure in Black Sabbath, Dio did, and decided it was time to form his own band. He's pretty well known being in Sabbath and Rainbow and all that stuff, so he doing his own thing would have always worked. He followed the fantasy thing with Lord of the Rings. They were super popular then, Dungeons and Dragons, the whole thing. Much of the heavy metal took place on similar turf. A Realm of Dark Towers is what Dio says to that one. Stand Up and Shout, Holy Diver, Gypsy, Caught in the Middle, Don't Talk to Strangers, Straight Through the Heart, Invisible, Rainbow in the Dark, and Shame on the Night. Again, I could play all those songs. I put an Iron Maiden one on here, of course, so Number of the Beast for me, 1982. People would disagree. Some people said, God, and now my brain's broken. Help me, quick.
Bruce Dickinson. What?
No, the name of the other albums I can't think right now. Sorry.
Number of the Beast?
No, the other one.
Number of the Beast.
The
Somewhere
other one.
In Time.
Never mind. This was the first
Seventh
to feature.
Son.
We're no help.
That one. Thank you, Seventh Son. Some people argue that that's the best one. I have to disagree. This was the first to feature vocalist Bruce Dickinson and their last with Clive Burr. Met with critical and commercial success. I mean, Bruce Dickinson's voice.
Yeah, Bruce Dickinson. Two words, Bruce. Mm-hmm. Dickinson.
Dickinson.
Led Zeppelin 4. I didn't say it because you did Zeppelin too, but again, Black Dog, Rock and Roll, The Battle of Evermore, Stairway to Heaven.
Stairway to Heaven. End of story.
That's the song that defines Led Zeppelin. Yeah. Four Sticks, Going to California, and When the Levee Breaks. Pyromania, Def Leppard, 1983. Yeah. It is the one before the sappy one that Kevin talked about. Hysteria, I think, is better, but I like this one. Rock Till You Drop, Photograph, Stage Fright, Too Late for Love, Die Hard, The Hunter, Fool, and Rock of Ages, Coming on Fire, Action, How Words, Billy's Got a Gun. Rock of Ages, it's a great song. We all know why.
I want to change my vote. I like that one better.
You're done.
It is.
No changes.
No changes.
And that's my list.
Okay, and real quick, just a couple that, of course, I had Dark Side of the Moon on my list. I had Dirt by Alice in Chains.
So I figured
front
you
to back, you know, Pornograffiti by Extreme.
Oh, yeah.
Can't argue with that. I had Van Halen 1 as well. I had Moving Pictures as well. Born to Run. Mm-hmm. By Springsteen, way, you can't deny it. It's front to back. It's a masterpiece. Here's one, Michael Goltz, An Innocent Man by Billy Joel. Perfect. It's his. He had just gotten divorced from his wife and was dating supermodels. He said, "I felt like I did when I was a teenager." So I made a record with the music that I loved from the 50s, mm-hmm. and that record has, you know, Leave a Tender Moment Alone, Tell Her About It, all those kind of Christy Lee, which ended up being about. So anyways, his next wife. So that's on mine. And I had, of course, this is kind of cliche. A lot of people had this Dark Side of the Moon.
It's great, though.
It's a total masterpiece. 957 weeks on the charts.
With good reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was one of those records that they might go off the charts for a little bit and then would come back on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like people would, no, we can't forget about Dark Side of the Moon. Mm-hmm. It was like people like Lily buying it 40 and 50 times.
You know what, when you play them over and over again and break them, you can't help it.
But
I also have three copies of Nine Lives by Aerosmith, too, so there's that.
Well, there you go. Okay, guys, thank you. Ludini Rock and Roll Circus, we're going to, I think we got to, let's do, see if there's any birthday shout outs we need to
what
do.
What did the Beatles do today?
I know, right?
Something, I'm sure.
Uh-huh. On this day in 1961, Del Shannon was at number one on the UK singles charts with Runaway.
Runaway.
It's a great
there it
song.
Is. There you go. Right there.
Great jam.
Me
great
and Del
jam.
Del was singing Little Runaway.
Little Ava was born this day in 1945.
Wow.
Ian Paice, speaking of the Purple, drummer for Deep Purple, born this day in 1948. Colin Hay, from London Under. Robert Forrester. No. I was thinking about the actor Robert Forrester. What the hell? So, anybody else that we need to talk about? No.
We don't care about those people.
Thank you.
No. Keith Richards was found guilty this day.
What? No.
Long's house to be used for illegal smoking of cannabis.
No.
Wow.
Not Leo Keith.
That was an actual charge that was brought against somebody in 1967.
That's wonderful.
You were using your house for the illegal smoking of cannabis. Huh. What the hell, guys? Come on. That's not right.
It's just a different time, isn't it?
That's jacked up.
Yes.
This is crazy. You know, people talk today about how they feel oppressed and stuff. Come on. Calm down.
Now.
That was crazy, stupid, dumb. All right, that blew my mind. I don't even know how to end the podcast now. go to wolfscustoms.online, rockrageradio.com, download the app. And speaking of Rock Rage Radio, Lily?
I have a show called Hot Licks with Lily Six, Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, Rock Rage Radio. Download the app for free on your phone or just go to rockrageradio.com. And I will be at Living Dead Weekend on Sunday. I'm going to be on the 3 o'clock panel talking about the Steel Man movie. So come see me there. It's at the Monroeville Mall.
Monroeville. Okay. Thank you, Lily. Our websites are LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com. Got a brand new website up there with bios and the whole thing. As well as go to LulaBartyMusic.com. If you want to get copies of some records that I've released, you get some free downloads. As well as the song that I'm going to close with, the backstory of it and why I wrote it and what it's all about. You can check that out at LouLombardiMusic.com. Pittsburgh Kevin, any parting thoughts?
Yeah. This Sunday I want to announce. This Sunday, early in the morning, this coming Sunday.
Yes.
I will be sleeping in. So, I'm looking forward to that, everybody. I'm looking forward
Guys,
to that.
Guys, have a great week, and we'll catch you all on the next. Oh, wait a minute. Before I do that.
Hold on.
No. Let's give one more shout out to our winner.
Yes.
Yes.
Nicholas Suracek.
That's
and
what
a shout
saying.
Out to our. Yes.
He's not good with names.
Well, sorry, we're bad with names. We don't talk for a living. You know? Guys, we love you. We'll catch you all in the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.
Make the world I need. Oh, in your arms, sing to me. day.